The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So today we just finished a spring equinox ceremony, which was the offering of merit and loving kindness and help to that which is stuck and unable to take in the Dharma, because all of us are pure and all of us are good. And so we are offering that to these hungry ghosts, is what we call them. And really, it's just the unsettled karma, and that can be a ghost or something within ourselves. It's not separate. My intention today is to talk primarily about the fire of blame, because I think blame can be quite painful for all of us. And it's also painful in something that we do. Do I need to speak louder? Yeah, thank you. Me, of all people, I tend to be very loud, so I'm going along trying to be quiet and not boom. Blame is one of the praise and blame are one of the eight worldly conditions. They're the worldly winds. They're the things that blow through this existence of ours, and they raise havoc when they blow, in part because they both praise and blame help us to solidify this illusion that we are a complete and separate self, and that we're separate from everything, and that we have to look out for number one. We have to take care of ourselves. And so blame is often the outcome of that, because people are reacting to us being so concerned about ourselves, or we're reacting to other people and they're threatening us. So hopefully this Dharma talk, if there are any unconverted karma that needs some assistance, this Dharma talk will be helpful, because blame is definitely in the realm of hungry ghost. And when I say blame, I mean criticism. It's, you know, we say praise and blame in Buddhism, but criticism is what's going on. So when I was preparing for this talk, I asked, you know, well, what are my tendencies in blame? And all kinds of things came out. It was a very fruitful preparation, is all I can say. I saw all kinds of stuff. But one thing I noticed is, you know, blame's really charged. It carries a big weight. If someone blames us, if someone's blaming us, we're immediately defensive. It's really hard not to be defensive. It takes a lot of training not to be. And also blame is very hard to drop. I know people who blame something their parent did 40 years ago. They're still carrying the comment their mother made, or what their sister said to them. You know what I mean? It's potent. It's a very potent thing. And so one of the things I asked myself was, why? Why is it so charged? Why is it so strong? And part of it is that I think blame comes from the place of wanting to be right, as in, I am right and you are wrong. It's the great divider. And we hang on to it, we harden it, we make a shell, and we harden our rightness, and then we just throw the blame out at others. And somehow it distorts by this hardness, by this solidity. It distorts our ability to look at things in a way that does not have blame in it. So, how do we dissolve the right? To some extent, this is, I'm jumping right in to the, this, you could say this is the end of the Dharma talk, but it's not yet. Got to hang on a little bit. But this is really important. The way to dissolve it, this being right, is to see that everything's for our benefit. And then it sidesteps that need to judge. Was this good? Am I coming out on the praise side of things? Am I coming out of the blame? Is so-and-so coming out on the praise side, or are they coming out on the blame? But just seeing the good that life gives us. Reverend Master Jiyu, in her diary, The Wild White Goose, if you have not read that, please read it, because it's a beautiful book about changing one's perspective of being, of a, she, it's her story of her going to train in the Far East and being in a all-male monastery and being a foreigner and learning the Dharma. And what, the way she survived was by making that critical shift in her perspective of, maybe I need to see everything that's going on here is good for my benefit. It was very important. Read that book if you haven't. Reread it if you have. So blame is both to ourself and to others. It's like judgment. If we're judging other people, we're judging ourselves. All it takes is looking at what we're doing, and we'll see that. We'll see that. And it's, I think we're raised on blame. It's in our mother's milk. It's in the schools we go to. It's in our family relationships, blame, praise and blame. We grow up with it. And actually, I think we come into this world. I certainly did. I came in with this huge baggage. It's part one of my trunks that I carried around and carry around or pick back up, whatever it is. But blame is really important. It's a part of the human condition. It's in marriages. It can be. It can be the minefield of marriage or partnership relationship. The being dissatisfied and people not meeting our needs, and therefore we blame. And then we turn it back on ourselves. We failed. We didn't do something right. We're blaming. They call the eight worldly conditions the winds, because they're constantly blowing. And the same thing with praise. We thirst for praise. It's like we drink praise like salt water. And so we always want more. We're never satisfied with it. It can never be enough, because it's an illusion. It's supporting that sense of separation, of that we are something, solidifying. In our daily news, of course, we can see that the praise and blame, I mean, blame is there in our daily news constantly. There's always countries, people, groups of people, different religions, they're all always can be caught up in this blame of each other. And if you're not in the middle of it, like the Middle East, we're not, quote unquote, in the middle of the Middle East. So we can step back and say, it's ridiculous for the Jews and the Palestinians not to get along. Isn't that crazy? Why don't they just put it down? It's been going on for 4,000 years. Enough. But guess what? We can't put it down either. So that's why they can't put it down. So we all have to just learn how to put it down. We blame our politicians, as we all know. And I was thinking, one of the four benefactors is our president. And I think how helpful that is. This president is a benefactor to us by the fact that they are our president. Very important to hold that kind of space with it. Bottom line is that blame separates us from others, and it separates us from our true heart. Sometimes, and I'm speaking from my own experience here, sometimes blame is so pervasive within us that we actually have a script of blame going on. I noticed it when I was out at the Hermitage this last time. I was cleaning the house for the next person. And I had this script running of how this person was going to blame me because the house wasn't clean enough. And I went, oh, that's really interesting. Where's that coming from? You know, that's one of our scripts. We have these little things, the little blame recorder that goes on during our brain. And, you know, it doesn't matter whether it happens or not. We can project blame towards others and towards ourselves. I had an experience many years ago when I was just beginning to train in Buddhism. And actually, it was the experience which brought me to Shasta Abbey and to the Dharma, because it was such a powerful experience. And what happened was that my first daughter died at birth. And I was in a hospital. We were in a hospital, my husband and I. Anyways, the baby died before the birth. And by the time she was born, they realized she was dead, and so on and so forth. And so it's a very difficult situation. And I carried a sense of blame that somehow the nurses who were there should have been more helpful, should have known or whatever. And there was one nurse in particular that had been working with me, and she just wasn't kind. And so I was reacting to her. And this was a couple of years later. I was holding my other daughter in my arms, and I was standing in line in the post office, and I saw that nurse, and that anger and that blame came up, and I was thinking about her, and I said something to my husband, and my husband, of course, this wasn't his feeling, so he had the perspective of saying, well, why are you still angry? Why are you still blaming her? So I thought, well, that's a good question. So I went back later and sat down in meditation. And I turned towards the whole situation and I said, why am I blaming? And then I just sat there. And what came up in meditation, I had nothing to do with this. It's just kind of, this is how it is when we meditate. Things arise. But what came up was that at the time that nurse was being unkind to me, my daughter died. And I actually felt her leave my body. But I didn't know what it meant. I wasn't meditating very long. I didn't understand what these things mean. And I reacted to the nurse instead of being present with what was going on. And once I saw that, the whole thing melted. The whole blame went away. The anger went away. Everybody was doing the best they could. And certainly, this experience was for my benefit. So later, I thought about it, and I thought, well, gee, I didn't blame myself when I saw, oh, why didn't I say something? Because I saw I didn't know. I didn't know what to do. And we can hold ourselves. When that compassion moves through us, we get it too. It's part of us. So the benefit of that goes to self and other. And I heard it. A talk on meditation from River Master Khotan, which relates quite specifically to this, and I'll show how. But he said something in the course of his Dharma talk. And of course, when you quote somebody and their Dharma talk, he may have meant something entirely different. So really, you know, this is what it meant to me, is what I'm trying to say. It's not necessarily what he's saying. But he said that we don't watch our mind when we meditate. We look through it. And I went, oh, that's interesting, because I do watch my mind a lot when I meditate. I learn things from it. But that kind of rattled around in this mind. And when I thought about it, I realized, yes, he's pointing to the recognition that what goes in our mind is void, unstained, and pure. It's empty. And that if we look through it, we can often see the compassion, the luminosity, the pure emptiness that is beyond it. And I found that really helpful because actually that story I just told about my daughter dying, that was what I experienced. It was a looking through things rather than at them and making them solid. So I think that was a very helpful thing about blame. I'm in the business of de-solidifying blame and kind of tossing it up in the air, as you can see through my hands. It's as important not to blame ourselves as it is not to blame others. It's hand in hand. It's not separate. And I think, in part, when we work on not blaming ourselves, it actually enables us to not blame others. It doesn't matter which comes first. Both of them we work on. And part of it is just the willingness in our training, in our daily training, in our meditation, is to forgive ourselves for our ignorance and delusion. And when I say ignorance, for me, the word ignorance means ignoring. That's how I see the mistakes I made are almost always based in an ignoring of what's really going on and me not wanting to either be present to it or to hear it, to respond to it. So that's what I mean by ignorance. And when we forgive ourselves, really we're practicing uncomplaining all acceptance. We're accepting. Oh, yes, I did that. Oh, yes, I did that. Isn't that interesting? And I think turning towards ourselves with kindness is critical to breaking down the hardness of the blame. You know, it opens up our perspective when we start being kind to ourselves. And that opening up of our perspective, I think, this also relates to what Reverend Master Khotun was talking about the through it. Because when we meditate, we're not directing things. It's just the opposite. We are surrendering or sitting still with things and allowing them to rise, allowing them to teach us, and allowing things to unfold. So that is how we open our hearts to blame. When I notice that I'm directing blame outward, I find it helpful to say to myself, oh, well, what's my responsibility? Do I have a choice in this situation? And I do that in part because it shifts that, as Reverend Renee called it, the heat-seeking missile that's you're aiming towards, and instead kind of turns it back and says, well, honey, what did you do? And that softens it, opens it up. And then the other benefit of that is we can do something about ourselves. We really can do very little about other people, you know. So it helps us get on the program, girl. And also, I think when we recognize our own part in things, it makes us grateful for the difficulties that we have. When I was a new monk, I still am a new monk, but anyway, when I was new to the monastery, I was struggling with the way one of my monastic officers was responding to me. And I took refuge in some senior monks, my Kyojusi and the novice master. And, I wanted them to help me with this. And what came back was the question to me, why do you want this person to be different? Oh, that was enormously helpful because it wasn't about that person. It was about me. You know, why do we want people to be different than they are? We can be sorry for the suffering they do. We can be compassionate for what's going on. And maybe we're wrong. Maybe we're not looking at it right. maybe we've got the distorted view. So why we want someone to be different is really a helpful question. It's very, very helpful. And it really helped me to open my heart to this monk, which I did. And there was something going on between us, but from that openness, we could clean it up. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's really important. And the other thing that was mentioned to me at that time was, when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. And I find that, yes, that's really helpful. When we're pushing away something, when we're making an opposite, that's a clue. The clue phone's ringing. We're not, and it's for us. We're not looking at the Buddha nature. We're turning away. Now, someone who is very close to me spoke to someone and caused them to doubt me and Buddhism. Well, this was very difficult when it happened, and I didn't know what to do about it. In one sense, I still don't know what to do about it. I haven't done anything. I've just been sitting with it. And this is for a long time, long years. And I've been dealing with the interaction of that doubt of Buddhism. You know, I wondered, am I just supposed to forgive? Am I supposed to confront the person? You know, what is it? And what is it that we're supposed to do when someone, quote, seemingly unjustly blames us? And I think one of the things I got out of this was that it was really helpful to look at myself, to keep looking at myself. Well, what was my part in this situation? What did I do? And actually, there was an important part, karmic part, that I needed to see and accept. And, you know, to practice uncomplaining all acceptance, you know, sometimes you can say, well, oh, Buddhists are a bunch of doormats. But no, that is not what uncomplaining all acceptance is about. It's actually one of the most difficult, arduous practices there is, because it means accepting the situation as it is. And a lot of the work of that acceptance goes on internally, inside us. And then from that place, then we go out and respond compassionately to the situation. You know, you never know what will happen relative to another person, whether you should say something or not. Nothing, absolutely nothing, can stop your own healing in a difficulty. You know, and what's good to do? Well, the one thing I can say from personal experience is it's much better to take action when you're in the realm of compassion than when you're in the realm of blame. If you want a clue for, I mean, you know, a thing for life, take home with you, you know, live your life by, well, I better be feeling compassionate about this person rather than feeling blame if I want to have any communication, any way of resolving things. When someone violates our trust, this is very, very potent situation, and it's very hard not to blame. It's really painful. And we trusted someone, we trusted some situation, and then it's been violated and the person has broken the trust. And that happens in a variety. It happens in marriages and relationships, it happens in spiritual communities. It's a common denominator for all of us. And the question is, again, how do we respond to it? What do we do? I mean, it's so easy to blame the other person. How could you do this? But actually, it's, again, very helpful to turn it inwards and say, well, okay, what was my part in this relationship? And I have found that extremely helpful, extremely fruitful, because oftentimes we make the same mistakes over and over again. So we're in this relationship or we're in this problem. And this isn't new. It's just got a new body, a new format. But it's the same problem. I've looked at the situations that have happened to me. It goes all the way back to when I was a little baby. I mean, you know, we get in the same thing over and over again. So who are we blaming? You know, it's a really important question. And then when we look at our own part in it and we forgive ourselves, it opens us up to be able to forgive the other person. And I find it really helpful to step right back in or stay trusting. It doesn't mean you don't use wise discernment, but it's really important. The antidote for a violation of trust is not to wall yourself off. It's actually to open your own heart to your own weaknesses and to be aware of them. And then to carry that carefully, but aware, into the next situation you're in. Part of my forgiving myself for my own role in a violation of trust was to recognize, oh, this is really powerful. I might do this again. And somehow that was really helpful. Oh, okay, I might do this again. I can still trust, but I need to just keep that awareness. Oh, I could make this mistake again. I would like to read something from Buddhist writings. It's a poem, "The Song That Attests to the Way." I'm not going to say who the ancestor was who wrote it, because I won't be able to pronounce his name, his or her name. "In attending to the slander of others, tolerate the wrongs they do you." I'm skipping a few lines. "When I hear what such say, it is as though I were sipping sweet dew. If you regard the ill speech of others as a source of merit and virtue, they will indeed become your friends. When you feel the teeth of backbiting, if you do not give in to fault-finding hatred or partiality, how better can you give rise to the power of the unborn's compassion and forbearance?" That's pretty clear, isn't it? I think it's also very challenging. To be able to hear criticism as sweet dew is not something I can do yet. I'm not there. But I hold that possibility. I hold that. I aspire and long to be thus. When someone is blaming us on a practical level, or even praising us, I find it, but especially the blame, but also the praise. I'm uncomfortable with that too. I'm uncomfortable with both of them. It's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay to not feel good and to just be with the body and watch it and say, oh, okay, oh, this doesn't feel very good. And then to step into the blame and say, oh, is that so? It's to trust our own heart that actually, I want to know if I've made a mistake. I want to know if I've done something wrong. Because that's how I can fix it. And I have to trust that I have that ability to fix it, to respond to it. And if the person's wrong, well, so what? Then we know it. You know, oh, okay, well, that's what they think. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. I don't think they're right, but I'll sit with it. You know, it gives us, that's as close to sweet dew as I can get at this moment, but you know, it's helpful. I see, believe me, I've watched the habitual patterns in my mind which go towards blame. And over again, I find it's just helpful to look at it as like a hot ember. Oh, there it is. And drop it. Oh, there it is. And also to challenge myself. I find it very helpful to challenge myself. And I'll say to myself, oh, are you recognizing that whenever you're dealing with this person, blame is the default position. That's a clue. Or, why do I find fault with that person, but not someone else who does the same thing? Very important to see what we're doing, to see that and just kind of shake ourselves loose. And in that sense, blame becomes not a fire, but actually a friend. It really helps us to open our hearts to what it is we're really doing. And I think our willingness to internally challenge our thoughts, that benefits us. It reinforces for ourselves that we are trying to purify our karma, that we are making the effort. And it gives us the strength to believe in ourselves, to have the kindness to give ourselves a certain generosity. I think when we convert blame, we are moving towards affirming rather than negating. And that's so powerful, to affirm the inherent goodness, the Buddha nature of others or ourselves. And I think the precepts do not speak against others, and do not be proud of yourself and devalue others. Working on those precepts are really helpful in seeing praise and blame. And when we try, Reverend Master Jiu said, when she first tried to get the monks many, many years ago to not speak against others, she said all conversation stopped. So I understand this, and it's a lifelong work. Really, it's a lifelong work of learning how to respond to what someone's actions may be without negating the person, but actually affirming the person. And strive to work this into my life continually. I think affirming of others and our own inherent goodness, it facilitates the dropping off of blame. So it's the positive side of what we can do. And it's actually quite revolutionary. I think the Buddha was one of the greatest, or the revolutionary of this world. And still, 2,500 years later, his teaching is still revolutionary. If we really practice it, the world would be entirely different. We would be entirely different. And it's really that praise and blame just clog up our pipe. And when we let them go, then the compassion and who we really are just flows through. And that's what we all want. So that's my Dharma talk today. Thank you.